Got a work session on four bills, a hearing on Senate Bill 515, and concluding our confirmation hearing on Mr. Lobdell. We're going to start, however, with a overview by Katie Murphy to bring us up to date on what's happening in the House E&E Committee on the Land Use Bill. You should have a document.
Updated.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Katie Murphy from Legislative Research. You have before you a matrix showing the major land use proposals outlined by issue topics. In the far right-hand column, you will find the action taken by the House Environment and Energy Committee. The committee has been holding hearings and work sessions for nearly 6 weeks, almost exclusively on the land use package. It has worked its way through the acknowledgement issues, post-acknowledgement issues, local process issues, and economic development issues. It's currently working on the appeals process, and I think that's the last major issue area that it will be addressing before a bill goes to the House floor.
Okay. Now, Kate, they've adopted all these amendments are just been adopted conceptually, right?
And that's correct.
What is their procedure going to be in terms of actually adopting them?
Currently, Legislative Council is working with committee staff drafting language
for each one of those conceptual
for each one of these conceptual amendments, and then that language will go back to the committee for
final
review
approval.
And final adoption.
Okay, so trying to find the appeals section on here.
Appeal should be at the very end with nothing in the fourth column.
Okay. And that, do you have any idea of when they're planning to complete that part of the?
As of a week ago, they had hoped to complete it by the end of this week. It doesn't appear that that will be the case. I would expect by the end of
next week
or the middle of next week.
Middle of next week. Yeah. Senator Day?
I've talked in private about this, but I am extremely nervous. Conceptually is one thing, but if you don't have a draft form where people can start chewing over and working on the law, that's not your problem.
I understand.
I don't know where we're going to get some or not. And I guess, again, I'm going to try myself on the wall.
Well, I think they've told us they would have by the 15th, and I'm meeting with Darlene, and I'm going to give her basically they're trying to work out some time certain, at which point, if they don't have anything over, we can start looking at it.
And I know you feel like that.
Yeah.
I know this. You start talking about something conceptually, start putting it in bill form, that's a whole lot different, and I don't think they're going to pass something out of committee on a concept. I think they're going to demand that they go through those chapter if I know that committee, and if that's another 4 weeks, then maybe their ship
right.
has sailed.
Okay, any other questions?
Thank you.
Thanks very much. She, just for the information of the committee, Katie is working on a similar document for that 237. Have all the issues laid out like this so we can compare the differences. Okay, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 318, which is the ex parte contact bill. And Todd, you want to run over the amendments for us? Should have some amendments, set of amendments for that.
I believe they're in your bill books.
They are.
You've got them.
Who are they from, Todd? Was this what we asked you to do?
Yes.
This came out of the discussion we had at the last
Senator
year.
Starkovich had found some language in the Administrative Procedure Act that spoke to ex-party contacts and said basically that they are allowed as long as they're put on the record. We took the language almost verbatim out of the Administrative Procedure Act.
Today, I have, pardon me, Mr. Chairman. I have a little note that Cheryl Perrin left me that speaks to some addition to 318, and I have to just look there. But what she's pointing out to me, that notification of all parties is a public announcement at each public meeting in which the subject matter is ex parte kind of is to be considered. Now, that is not in the amendments that you looked at, was it, Todd?
No, but we talked about this today. I passed that on to all the members.
Okay, and they all have a copy of it. Okay.
And it seems to me that it probably does address a legitimate problem, because parties and notice and all these things are defined in the Administrative Procedures Act, but this bill is not, the language of this bill is not part of the Administrative Procedures Act, and so it might be proper to address what they mean by notice.
Okay, you should have a mock-up of all the changes, with the exception of Cheryl's suggestion, which we'd have to also amend in it by a separate
vote. Mr. Chairman, to start the work going, I'll move the amendments dated 4-12-83 to Senate Bill 318-1.
Okay, Senator Day moves amendments SB 318-1. Is there any discussion? Is there objection to that motion?
Well, I don't have a real objection. I just want some clarification. No, go ahead. I'll deal with it in a minute.
Okay.
I shall notify.
Essentially, the intent is to allow ex parte contacts, but that they just have to be placed on the record so that people know that they have taken place and have an opportunity to rebut the substance of those contacts also on the record.
This is the current law, as I understand it. According to the testimony, this is the current law. All we're doing is putting it where they can see where it's at.
We have a motion on.
There's a... did she talk to you about the...
Yeah, we're going to get there.
Okay.
Okay. Is there any objection to adopting those amendments? Okay, so ordered. Now, Todd, we just adopted 318-1. Now, you want to speak to Cheryl's concern of where that would be put?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Day.
Could Todd go into this amendment that Cheryl apparently left with a little more? I'd like to know a little more about it and just where it fits in.
Okay. You understood what I just said about notice? Okay.
Yeah.
This would just basically define what they mean by notice, which would be that notice is basically putting it on the record. That's what it amounts to. At the...
Her concern was on the language at the bottom of page 2
right.
of your mock-up.
Okay.
Which states that the board shall not reverse or amend a land use decision unless the public official did not place on the record the substance of the ex parte contact.
The first "not" is to be deleted. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay. Could you? Is that the only change? Is that?
No. And that was part of the original amendments. I just left it off in the mock-up.
All right.
On page 2, line 27.
Oh, yeah, right, I got you.
The board shall not, that "not" is to be deleted. Right. So it would read, the board shall reverse or remand a land use decision under review due to an ex parte contact or bias. Okay. Only if the public official did not place on the record the substance of the ex parte communication or did not notify the parties, all parties of the communication,
and
of their rights to rebut it on the record.
Means.
So this this separate paragraph would go in after.
Excuse me,
Okay, Senator Cohen?
I don't think we're trying to include the separate paragraph, are we? I think you're not going to have, we don't have a place to fit that separate paragraph,
no.
I don't believe. I think it has to be redone.
It has to be.
I think it's going to need to go to council to find out where it goes.
I thought you were trying to fit it in here, and that's what I was.
No, I don't think it fits very well. It's going to be maybe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would move in concept that the amendment be drawn up where it properly fits, and then we can look at it, okay,
right.
If you have any objection to that.
No, I just, does the committee understand that paragraph modifies notify, defines notify? Okay. Is there any objection to that? Okay, so ordered. We'll have the bill with that additional language sent down to council and then returned to us for final action. Is there any other comments on 318? Okay, close the hearing on 318 and open the hearing on Senate Bill 250.
250?
Yeah. Todd, do you want to run through that? That's a surplus lands bill.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you should have in your materials.
You have some amendments?
A communication from Darrell Rawls, Director. I was going to point that out first, which is a list of surplus lands and a letter stating that the Highway Division right-of-way and et cetera have been excluded. The amendments and a mock-up should also be in your materials, stapled together.
Have you all found those yet?
Mine is in front. Dale Rawls' memorandum is in front of the bill, and I can't find the amendments, but maybe I
had it wrong.
Just a second. We got some over here on the side. Yes.
I don't have the amendments.
We have her find them for you.
Okay. Well, are these an extra one?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
Okay, thanks.
In response to some testimony we heard last night, last time we heard the bill, the amendments would enter a Section 2 which would require that all government agencies send a revised and updated inventory of public land in their possession to the Department of General Services, which would be a repository for that information. The original bill asked that the Department of General Services report to the Legislative Assembly no later than 30 days before the beginning of session a revised and updated inventory, and it came to our attention that some of the agencies were not submitting
the
information.
Mr. Chairman, one of the supporters of the bill, I had a chance to talk to her on two different occasions, and they would be satisfied to get the inventory updated from all the agencies and bring it in, and I asked Darrell to provide what he could within the urban growth boundary just for their information, which had been furnished, but I've got to tell you the origin of these amendments, and I don't have my name. I asked they be drawn up accordingly based on my conversations, and I can't think of the young lady's name, but
Olivia Clark.
Olivia Clark, who is supportive of that approach, okay?
The deleted part is the section that refers to the same thing that added section. Only it makes it more specific that the department will receive those inventories.
For discussion purposes, I'll move the amendments to Senate Bill 250-1 dated 4/12/83,
E2. Okay, Senator Day moves SB 250-1, Legislative Council Amendments. Is there any discussion?
Does the inventory include Department of General Services land?
It includes all. All surplus lands. It isn't exclusive General Services. We're asking that other agencies that do not submit to General Services at this time submit so that we have an accumulation of an entire repository. That's the effect of the amendment.
Other discussion? Is there objection? So ordered.
I move the bill as amended due pass to the floor.
Senator Day moves amended Senate Bill 250 to the floor with a due pass. recommendation. Is there discussion? Okay, clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Board. Do you want to hear that, Senator Day?
Yeah, I would like to.
Close hearing on 250, I mean, the work session on 250, and move to 249.
Well, maybe
it was that kind of stuff. Okay, so 249 here. Okay, Senate Bill 249 was the bill that prohibited cities and counties in their comprehensive plans from ordinances preventing the siting of manufactured homes in lots, on lots in single-family residential zones. And I think I'll have Mr. Miner come up and explain these amendments since they originated.
What number are you on, Mr. Chairman?
Senate Bill 249.
249?
Yes, you should have a mock-up also with the amendments. Make sure they all have them here first. Okay, you got those?
For your record, I'm Don Miner on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. We've proposed some amendments to Senate Bill 249. After listening to the testimony and the concerns of the committee, we thought that one of the biggest problems the committee and the local governments had was the requirement that manufactured homes be allowed on all residential lots. The purpose of this amendment is to limit that so that cities and counties can choose which lots. Still, the home will have to meet the requirements in the bill, that it be multi-section or greater, and meet the square footage requirements, have the appearance of a site-built single-family dwelling. But the city can choose which lots that home goes on. The only thing they can't do is choose no lots. There's really not a lot of control on how they go about this. We would hope that they would be reasonable in their decision. There's also a provision that says a city can choose to allow homes on individual lots that don't meet these standards so that they could have lesser standards if they chose. That's fairly simple.
So
the home has to appear to be a single family dwelling, and the city gets to choose which lots it gets to go on.
So essentially, the departure from the initial bill is this just says they can't ban them completely. They just have to provide someplace the opportunity for those types of manufactured homes, and that they can still have to. They would still have to meet any criteria.
Yes.
With it, okay. And as I understand, this wouldn't start until after the first periodic review.
Correct. Beginning with periodic review.
Okay.
So that it doesn't throw the planning process into turmoil.
Okay, are there any questions for Mr. Meyer or his amendments?
I'm not.
Is there a start for this?
Maybe I'm just not reading that right, but it doesn't seem like that does what it says it does, what he says it does.
Okay.
Okay, you want to.
Well, from being cited on all lots, the regulations shall not prohibit directly or indirectly manufactured homes from being cited on all lots.
Let me have Todd read that sentence.
Okay.
Since it's
okay. It should read, it looks a little convoluted on the paper, upon and after the first periodic review, city or county comprehensive plans and land use regulations shall not prohibit directly or indirectly manufactured homes that meet the requirements of subsections 2 and 3 of this section from being sited on all lots. They shall not prohibit them from being sited on all lots planned and zoned for single family dwellings.
Yeah, that's the way I was reading it, but
okay. So they can might be able to be written in a better fashion, but it was essentially they can't have a blanket ban. They can ban it on part of the lots or most of the lots, but they can't completely ban them on all lots.
So they could ban it on all lots except one?
They could, yes.
We'll be here next day. Start with this and say you haven't done it. That's the way it works.
Hopefully there would be good faith there.
Any questions for Mr. Miller?
Thank you, Senator.
I give Gordon an opportunity to come up and Fred, if he wants, to speak to these amendments. Interest of equity. Who's first?
I want to take some notes.
Chairperson Kitz Hobber, members of the committee. My name is Fred Neal, representing the League of Oregon Cities. You are seeking response to Mr. Miner's proposed amendments. Certainly, they allay some of our concerns about the integrity of older neighborhoods with special design aspects to them in historical districts, and also neighborhoods where topography itself would tend to make it very difficult to transport a manufactured home to the site. Nonetheless, our concern underlying the remaining intent of 249, even as it might be amended, is that the legislature, the state of Oregon, does not need to take this step to impose this limitation on local government when local government itself is responding to needed housing in their communities. In many cases, and in fact, it seems from prior testimony in more instances than not, through the allowance in some areas, if not all, residential zones of the communities of manufactured homes.
Well, let me, if this language would allow you to basically prohibit the construction or the siting on all lots except one, I can't see what practical effect this would have on what you're already doing, unless perhaps you're not planning to act in the first place, which I assume you are, because that's what your statement on the record was.
Chairperson Kitzhaber, members of the committee. For the record, Gordon Fultz, Association of Oregon Counties. As a practical matter, I think you're absolutely right. I think, from fact, what I've been told is that probably no county will have a problem with this, because I think in most cases, every county has at least one mobile home sited somewhere, or one manufactured house. I think that what Fred's saying, and the only argument, is just the way, the principle of how we're getting there. I think Senator Cohen probably hit the nail on the head. We'll just be back here next session asking for two or somebody, and we'll have that kind of situation. And we thought, if you will, that the language that that came back, it came from last session, which is that which deals with the parks and subdivisions, which is also a requirement that comes in the periodic review stage, was a very strong shot at providing for this kind of housing, and that's all. It's not.
So it's basically, it's a philosophical.
I think that's it. I think it's a major issue.
Sir, well, we've got philosophy out of the way. Let's talk about how we're going to do it. Why don't we just tell you that you've got 6 months to get your dealy-bob together on plans that have been approved already for mobile homes. What if we tell you got 6 months to get it going, to get it in, to get something done? How does that strike you?
Well, I think,
since you like the other approach we took last session, I wonder if we give you some an action effort on that for approved plans. Instead of waiting for periodic reviews, it could be as much as 5 years, I think, is what the statute is, isn't it? 5 years from now, we might have a kiss in the promise. Why don't we get a kiss in the promise in the next 6 months? Well,
Chairperson Kitzhaber, Senator Day.
Oh, you won't? Okay.
Okay.
You want a response?
Yes.
I think certainly you could require the either this and or the mobile home parks or subdivisions in the next 6 months. I would only suggest to you, most counties and cities have met that, but you're going to add some time to that and to the process. And that's my only concern. If you add the time at the back end of it, then...
What time are you talking about?
Well, whatever time it would require for a city or county to provide for the park or subdivision, which is now scheduled to be provided after acknowledgement.
Would it be unreasonable to ask you from the date of passage of this act, is there a 1 year's time to comply with it instead of waiting for periodic review? Is that unreasonable, particularly because of the urgency and lack of accommodations for these facilities in some cases? Now, I cite you again, Salem just got with it in October of last year, which was reluctant, only because of force of law here.
Chairperson Kitzhaber, members of the committee, I guess, again, I'm not so sure that most cities and counties don't already comply with the idea, back to the minimum requirement here, of designating one lot
for with a mobile home. I think I would hope that the policy that you're trying to, if you put this forth, and again, we're suggesting a philosophical difference with that, but assuming that you forget that argument and you're going to go ahead with it, I would hope that you would be more encouraging that that local government should really consider. We mean business, please go further than mobile home parks and subdivisions, and that you not look at a quick compliance, but that you look, you give them the time to do some overall planning for that new requirement, which would fit into periodic review.
Mr. Chairman, the only problem I have a little bit with that is that last 2 years ago, we had bills in here. I'm not sure they're in the House. In fact, they weren't. They were in the Senate. And we didn't go forward with them, which was speaking to where mobile homeowners or people that wanted to live in manufactured parks were being restricted from living there because of kids, in other words, just adults only. And the reason they were such a, they wanted us to take that and require them to accommodate them if they had children. Some of the reason for that, there wasn't enough facilities. It was directly responsive to the fact that we weren't getting enough facilities online. If they close a park, and I've had one or two closed here in this county, it took us darn near 6 months and a lot of work of some county officials as well as myself, as you well know, to relocate those people. And we passed a moratorium on not being able to move for at least a year during that crisis. And that's 4 years ago.
I appreciate that.
And periodic review, and you can wait up to 5 years, the way I understand it. Am I wrong? Isn't a periodic review could be up to 5 years.
2 to 5 years.
Yeah, and I guess what you're saying is you prefer we not do anything and you continue along the timeline that you're in now. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I might. Chairperson Kitzhaber, Senator Day, the requirement on us very clearly, probably one of the most two specific goals with the exception of the coastal goals, is that we provide adequate housing in some form, not just this form, to meet the levels of income of the people within our jurisdiction. And I would hope that LCDC, and at least I think to this date, LCDC has been very careful to make sure that those plans are meeting that, not just in this one housing form. I guess that requirement is still on us, and we have to go up for acknowledgement, and the LCDC has to review for that particular test. I guess you're saying you're talking about one single type of housing here going further. I, from our preference, we would like to be able to balance this with other types of housing. And we're already required to have mobile home parks or subdivisions. Balance it with other kinds of housing to meet that need that you're suggesting. And that's what happens before acknowledgement, and it continues in periodic review with the new requirements that have been put forth in the bill last session.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roberts.
What kinds of single-family housings are there? What kinds of single-family housing are there? Could you enumerate the kinds?
There's condominium.
Yeah.
Condominium units. There's about two or three
other types.
Banana. We used to list these.
Well, I suppose there's single-family homes, and there's duplexes, and triplexes, and multis, and condominiums. But in terms of any other kind other than just multiples, are there any other kinds of single detached homes rather than stick built and manufactured?
I assume that geodesic domes or some other things like that.
Tents?
Freeway overpasses.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, the point is that, you know, they keep talking this language around about manufactured home, mobile home parks, and so forth, but what we're really talking about is stick-built homes versus manufactured homes. That's the real distinction here. You don't have anything that says no new residence can be built except in a residential park. You don't even say that no new house can be built except in a planned unit development.
Chairperson Kitzhaber, or Senator Roberts, I guess I don't want to make the distinguishing difference between mobile homes and other stick-built homes. It seems to me that if our requirement...
You have, though. That's the distinction we're talking about and asking you to remove it.
The requirement on us is to make sure that we provide housing to meet the income levels in our jurisdiction. I would assume that whether it costs... If we have an income level that suggests that they're affordable housing, it's got to be in the $30,000 to $50,000 range, that whatever form we provided that in, whether it be mobile homes, whether it be single-family housing or whatever, it had to be met. that test had to be met. That's
we're going
key.
One step beyond that, aren't we?
What you're saying
we're
here...
We're saying that you can no longer prescribe, meet that land use requirement by saying, but you've got to have an... what's the word I want? Octagonal house, eh?
Yeah, you're prescribing one form of housing that to an extent further than what we're allowed to do right
no,
now.
No, we're saying that you cannot prescribe that everybody must live in a square house. We're saying you shouldn't have that kind of restriction. You ought to let people live in a square house, oblong house, stick-built, or manufactured. We're trying to remove a restriction, not impose one. Nobody has to live in a manufactured home. But you're saying you can't. And we're just trying to, I am trying to see if we can get legislation which will remove your right to impose that restriction on a family as to how